Hello and welcome to a special playoff on the road edition of the True Blue LA podcast. I am not a road, but Eric Steven, you are.
Quite literally, I am driving as we're recording this on my way to Phoenix for game three and possibly game four. So it's the off day as we're recording this after the first two games of the series. So apologize for any audio issues where it's a little bit different than normal, but trying to get this out there in between games. So. What are your thoughts on the series so far?
So, some people know about this about me, some people don't. I have a really hard time watching playoff games, so sometimes I will, like, watch from afar and just tune in every 10 minutes and then walk away for my own stress levels. And then my rule of thumb is I will always watch, unless I'll turn it. I am actively paying attention but trying to forget about it. But I will turn it on if the Dodgers have a 5-run lead, and I will turn it on near the end, and I'll turn it on for any elimination games. A few times the Dodgers had the 5-run lead, and I would turn it on, and immediately it was erased. All things told, not that stressful of a game. Games really, especially game two once the fifth inning happened. It's the first time the Dodgers have had a 2-0 lead to start a series since 1988. Pretty good year.
2000.
Say that again.
2009.
Oh, thank
they
you.
They did it in yeah.
That's
yeah,
right.
Both 2008 and 2009, they swept the NLDS.
That's fair. It's still, nevertheless, not a thing I'm used to.
So you watch, exactly. You sort of treat playoff games like the eclipse. You can't stare directly at it.
Yeah.
You just have to sort of, it's an event that everyone wants, knows is happening, and is paying attention to, but you really can't pay, you can't stare too intently at it or else you're...
I'm not being that hyperbolic when I and this is only for Dodger games. I just cannot stand it. It is bad for my health.
Jerry West was that way for years when he was the GM of the Lakers. Like he couldn't watch. Like he had to be in the tunnel or something for like important games. Like it was crazy. Like he just got. He was so, take it so hard, or it's just too much. Just too much,
Yeah.
Overwhelming, I guess.
I'll rewatch the game after it's done, and I want spoilers. Basically, tell me spoilers, and I'll watch it. I watched from the seventh inning on last night, and I watched I think the eighth on game one. It was fun to see, I rewatched everything else after the fact.
It's weird, the two games so far, the Dodgers are up 2-0, but there's been points in the game where, they've had big leads in both games, and there's been points where Arizona has they've take some runs in the two games, so they've sort of made this comeback where Dodgers team is a little uneasy. But I think the general broad overview is they won game one by four and they won game two by three. And that part I think is playoffs are generally, you're going to, like you say, you have trouble watching. It's generally going to mess with your stomach. And if you have this pit in your stomach watching or the nervousness. But winning games by three and four runs, back-to-back, that's pretty solid. You're only going to get, a one-run game in there or just a very tense game throughout. So anytime you can sort of string together a few of those wins, you're in a good spot. And I think that it's really been the Dodger offense, I think, so far has been sort of carrying them.
And even then, when you look at the bad spots, they seem sort of anomalies almost. Obviously, there's the whole Clayton Kershaw seventh inning on stats and narratives, and we can talk about that for a little bit. So that kind of went wrong. Tony Watson gave up single, and then Brandon Morrow was kind of a a weird, the three-run home, it was absolutely mashed three-run home run.
Yeah.
But the pitch didn't look that bad, and he looked great after that. So I don't know. Like, even though the Dodger pitching did give up a decent amount of runs, none of it really was super worrying to me. It's like, oh, Paul Goldschmidt hit a home run. That's what he does. Like, okay, that's, we have to expect that it was going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think, the Kershaw stuff, there's always a weird sort of, I don't know, maybe it's overprotective of him as a fan base or whatever, but, he doesn't, his playoff record, does not match his, his otherwise stellar, a regular season record. So that's always going to hang over him until, they ultimately win, or he comes through or something in the playoffs. That's something that's not going away. But so anytime that he sort of falters, there's always that sort of looming over him. And I think, giving up four home runs, this is a year where he's given up. He's never given up more than 60 home runs in a year before this year, and this year you have 23. Plus it was a shortened season because he missed 5 weeks with the back thing. So, home runs are up generally, but his home runs are up more, I think, than the normal. So that's a bit concerning. But all solos, he was pitching with a big lead. It was 7-1 at one point. He gave up a home run to J.D. Martinez, who hit a billion home runs for the Diamondbacks since the trade. And then two more in the two in the seventh. The issue in the first game was, he threw six innings at, Kershaw threw six innings at 92 pitches. They're up 7-2 at that point. I think they have to sort of treat him, especially in the playoffs, I think you have to have a quicker hook with him. Because we've seen time and time again where either he's looking off or tired or something, it's just something down the stretch where that's when the blow-ups happen or whatever. He hit home runs to Kettle Marte and Jeff Mathis back-to-back. That was a little bit shocking, but I think he could make an argument, not that you saw that coming, but he walked three guys in six innings, and he only walked, I think he only did it three times during the regular season. He had 30 walks in 27 starts. But Kershaw doesn't really walk anybody. So if he's walked three guys in 6 days, 30 in AC pitches, you have a big lead. I get that it's the bottom of the order and you want to, you can get it through seven, but I think you probably have to they're so aggressive with removing starters, at the first sign of any weakness or whatever, and maybe get a bullpen guy in there for a better matchup. I think you have to sort of treat Kershaw that way in the postseason more so than during the regular season. So, but that said, still big lead. If you're going to leave him in, that's the time to do it, really. So I didn't have too much of a problem with it, but I would have pulled it after six that day. But yeah, that's really the only minor quibble with that, with game one, I think.
Right. And I do think it's the reason why I say it's minor is that Dave Roberts has mentioned that, has given public credence to maybe we need to have a quicker hook with him. He mentioned that he had 110 pitches in the back of his mind for the limit, and maybe that's going to be closer to 95. And who knows why Rusty Heyman emailed us asking us, is Kershaw hurt at all? Velocity is down a little bit. He did have that stint on the DL. It could be that he's just such a competitor that he's just overexerting himself more than he normally would in the first six innings. Who knows why? But as Dave Roberts mentioned, when you have the bullpen looking really solid, I haven't seen Pedro Baez yet, but other than that, everyone's looked really, not just the stats, not just numbers, but the eye test. Everyone's looked really prepared for this. Especially when you have a guy like Kenta Maeda who can, presumably go a little bit further. And Kenley's already shown with the five out save yesterday that he's willing to really put some work on his arm to get the results we need and to put a little bit less pressure on the pitcher. So we'll see what that is going forward. But, Kershaw's had these games like he did where he really kind of only had one pitch and he wasn't looking his best. And through six innings, he was seven strikeouts, three walks, a good performance, not a great performance, but a good one. So if that's what Kershaw's like with one pitch, maybe you stretch him a little further when he's got everything going. He has no walks. the pitch count's closer to 88 after six. But if not, you know, yeah, take him out. And even if he does have a great performance, you only need three innings from your bullpen, and this is a bullpen I think we can trust to do that.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, Kershaw and Dave Roberts were both asked about, you know, Kershaw's back actually quite a bit after the game, and both, you know, kind of were pretty adamant that he's fully, like, healthy and having no real issues. The only one, worry spot, I guess. I haven't checked the exact numbers, but pretty sure his velocity was down as the game wore on. I don't know how concerning that is. Like, you know, he was hitting 95, maybe 96 early in the game, and then down a few ticks later. That's, you know, that'll happen. But if there's any concern, it might be that, just in general, where, maybe the fastball's not, differentiating enough from the slider. And I mean, if the curveball's not effective, hitters can just sort of sit on the hard stuff, and it makes it easier to hit him. That's it. He gave up 5 hits total, four home runs, but like you said, generally good, perfectly cromulent performance from Kershaw. But it's just something to watch going forward. I think you just have to treat him with a little more like kid gloves than you normally would, just given like everything in total. He also mentioned, Kershaw did, that it was kind of prodded in this direction, but Kershaw said, playoffs they're taxing because you're going like, you're so focused on every single pitch. Like, that's like a mental tax, and it happens. So I get why, guys get pulled earlier, but I think that's why you have to sort of consider that with him too. You mentioned Maeda as well. He's kind of death on righties, has been all year, and his stuff plays up in the bullpen when he goes in short bursts. So, he's going to be a weapon. He went through Pollock, Goldschmidt, and Martinez in game two, and he was pulled only after the three batters, but he struck out Pollock and Martinez and got Goldschmidt, I think, on the ground out. I forget how he got out, but he looked really good. So that's a positive sign. If he's sort of that he could be like a super effective, righty-on-righty guy, that's something that will really help them, going forward.
So we'll turn our sights to game three before we wrap up. I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think if there is a game four, we can probably get an episode out. And if not, we'll do one between either games three and four and whatever the next playoff game is. Hopefully that's game one of the NLCS. So we have Darvish and old friend Zach Greinke. Certainly an interesting game. Darvish has looked shaky to start his Dodger career, but then ended up on a really strong few solid notes. He's obviously got great stuff that can play well in Chase, as well as you can in Chase. But that said, Zach Greinke has a great numbers at home, is obviously just a great pitcher. What are you expecting from game three?
Yeah, I think, first of all, Arizona is in like desperate need of length from Greinke, because they're game one, they used Greinke and Ray in the wild card game, so that sort of set them back a little bit. They had to use Tywin Walker, who was ready to go game one, but he only lasted one inning and threw 48 pitches, so they had to go to Zach Godley, who was like a candidate to start game four for them if it got that far, and he pitched 5 innings of relief. And then Robbie Ray, who was just sort of death on the Dodgers all season after sort of a long week for him. He was not sharp last night. Even the Dodgers didn't get a hit off him until the fourth, but then the floodgates opened a little bit. But he was wild before that. He had 4 walks in the night, 3 wild pitches. He was just sort of generally off, and he didn't last through, he didn't get out of the fifth, I believe. So they desperately need some length from Greinke. And Greinke actually hit his last like 2-3 starts, including the wild card game, has not been like overly effective. So he's kind of in need of a rebound to start as well. So the Dodgers have just been sort of relentless on offense, like really good job controlling the strike zone. It sounds simple, and especially looks great when it's working. The old swing at strikes and don't swing at balls, that kind of a thing. It's easier said than done sometimes, but that's really what's sort of working for them. They've been really excellent at buying, like waiting for their pitch and hitting it, and not sort of getting out of what's worked for them. Darvish, his second start with the Dodgers was in Chase. He only went five that game, but he did strike out 10. It was his second straight 10 strike game, and then that was right before he set it kind of went south a little bit with the delivery stuff. But like I said, yeah, he looked pretty good down the stretch. Now we get to see if it was probably a combo, but it was a combo of him, you know, refining his delivery, but also playing like three of the four worst offenses in baseball in those three starts. But we'll see what he's going to have on Monday. They were, you know, that was part of the reasoning. You know, Rich Hill, not very good numbers career-wise at Coors or Chase, so they wanted him more at home. They're more comfortable with Darvish either in any place, so that's kind of why he's going on the road. And I think if he could just keep Arizona in the park, something the Dodgers haven't been able to do, you know, for the first two games at least. But, you know, I think they have a shot to complete the sweep for sure.
So we can end it. Any other notes you want to end on before we call it? I guess I'll quickly mention game four. If necessary, is Alex Wood and Patrick Corbin. If listeners wanted to know that, that said, we're not going to talk too much about that, just because I'm not going to pretend it's a possibility. I am going to pretend.
Right.
I'm pretending it's not a possibility. There we go.
I agree. We do have time. I think, just given the way the schedule works out, we'll work something out. But I think we should be able to get another podcast up if this series is extended or as sort of a looking back / looking forward on this series and the next, you know, after Monday's or after Monday's game. So, yeah, and then also like here's sort of the silver lining, or not silver lining, because it'll be good. It's like it's good news and good news for Dodgers at least. If the Dodgers sweep, so I'm gonna be in Phoenix through two, or I'm leaving like Wednesday morning. You know, that would be the travel day in between games 4 and 5. If the series lasts that far, but if they sweep. I'm going to go check out some Arizona Fall League opening day action on Tuesday. So it's a perfect time to be in Phoenix right now.
Well, hopefully our next podcast, we're talking about the Fall League and we're talking about the NLCS.
Which I well, yeah, Will Smith, DJ Peters. You know what? I did want to bring up, too, Yasiel Puig has been pretty good, like very good, actually, the first two games.
That's pretty good.
He's been like a crazy ball of energy, like just pretty much all around. There's been so many like little fun, memorable moments. He had the first, he licked his bat in game one, and then he hit a double. And so he said he counted it as good luck. So he's probably gonna he might continue to do that. But he had a funny look on his face, like he got too much pine tar or something on the lick or something. It's pretty funny. But then that wasn't even the funniest tongue related thing of the night. he hit a triple later in the game. And then as he's sliding in, he did this like, sort of head nodding and like, you know, tongue wagging at the Dodger dugout, which is right there. Like everyone just like cracked it up. It was hilarious. And then what was more funny to me was like posting, the way the playoffs work. There's normal clubhouse stuff, but also MLB sort of mandates that the like post game is generally you get both managers at some point in the interview room, and then usually a player or two players from the winning team to sort of discuss the night or whatever. So on after game one, it was Justin Turner who homered and drove in five, and Puig who had two hits and drove in two. And so they were both in the interview room, and they were like really, it was a fun little playful like interview. They were joking around and stuff. Puig did the entire interview, especially in English, which he can do, but he doesn't do a ton, but it was great. I mean, he was just super engaging. And it's funny, like you look back, like it was literally 2 weeks ago where like Dave Roberts was, you know, as close as he gets to fuming, at that last, when he stole, tried to steal a base on his own, didn't slide, got benched the next day, then showed up like got benched again. Like that could have turned into like a little mini controversy at like a really bad time for the season, especially given how the Dodgers were playing at the moment. But now 2 weeks later, and like, you know, this just like catalyst ball of energy, doing all the things right, and it's, you know, he's harnessing his energy for good and not evil at this point. Kind of fun.
Yeah, both him, I texted you this last night, both him and Logan Forsythe are really picking a great time to peak, so.
Oh, right, and then you talked about, too, controlling the zone. A couple weeks ago, when Forsythe was really starting to pick it up, because, you know, didn't really hit for power like he had the last two seasons this year, has basically been, you know, really good against lefties, but almost unplayable against righties for a bulk of the season, but he's still getting playing time, but he was super passive almost to a fault for a while, where he was like not active, maybe looking for the walk too often and letting some hittable pitches go, and they kind of worked with him a little bit to be more aggressive, like when he gets good strikes to hit in hitter's count, he's actually going for it and damage, and that's really been working. He had I think he scored three runs last night. I can't remember if he had three hits or two hits in a walk, but yeah, he's looking really good. It's his first playoff experience, so he's right. Like you said, you're right. He's picking a good time to, you know, join the party, as it were.
Well, hopefully.
Also, did you see?
Go ahead. The sign.
Did you see Rich Hill's sign?
I was. Like I said, I was paying attention the whole time. But to use your phrase, I was. I was in the hallway. I was in the tunnel.
I can't remember a player for having a cardboard sign like that. I thought that was hilarious.
I texted my brother right after that this is not only the best Dodger team of my memory, but it's, I think, the easiest to root for. You just have such a different cast of characters that fit different. Like, you have the nose to the grind, really respectable baseball players, to use a John Hart term, and Chase Utley and Seager. You've got the kid in Bellinger, and then you have just the really fun characters, Justin Turner, Yasiel Puig, Rich Hill, just so many people that are just so easy to root for, and I'm really, really looking forward to hopefully doing this for 11 more or 9 more wins.
Yeah. And so, Kaley Jansen, you mentioned, too, 5-out save in game 2. He also pitched, he closed out game 1. He came in with a 5-run lead. He allowed an unearned run. So I think it's one of those things where, you know, in the regular season, we're probably like, why are you bringing in Kenley with, you know, a 5-run lead or whatever? I think at this point, like, especially given the off days of this series, and then there's going to be more off days, there's off days in the other series, too, but I think at this point, you never say exactly, but I would imagine if they had everything go to plan, like Kenley would pitch all 11 wins, like at the end, you know, no matter the lead, pretty much, just like get those wins, just close it out. Unless, maybe in like the later series where you have the three middle games in a row, you're more judicious and maybe we wouldn't use him with like a 5-run lead, but. I think if they had their druthers, they would go to Kenley just about every game with a lead late, no matter what.
I hope so. He's looked great. I'm just really excited. More wins, please. 9 more, please.
Nice. Okay, well, we're going to keep doing these little shorty episodes. Again, apologize for the audio. I'm in the car. It's been a good series so far for the Dodgers. They've scored 8 runs in 2 straight games. It's only the second time they've ever done that in the playoffs, in the postseason. They did it in 1955 in the World Series 2. So if they manage to do it again in game 3, I mean, their chances of getting a sweep are extremely high if they score 8 runs. But also, it would be the first time they've ever done that in 3 straight postseason games. So something to watch for game 3, which is Monday night. This will go up before the game. So, we'll probably know the American League results by then, but the Astros and the Indians, if they both sweep their series today on Sunday, then the Dodger game will be at 6:00. Otherwise, it's going to be at 7:00 on Monday night. So that's pretty much where we're at. So the Dodgers end up getting night games for the entire series. Last year, they were the other series with the Dodgers and the Nats, and the Cubs and the Giants were the night games for the division series. This year, it's the other way around. Cubs and Nats have been kind of relegated to the earlier starts, whereas the Dodgers and Diamondbacks get the late start. So a little bit different from last year. So But yeah, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you after game three.